Welcome everybody. This is How To English, Teach and Learn with Gavin M.
It's a podcast about teaching and learning English as a foreign language.
All opinions stated are personal and references will be given when necessary.
Dun 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 dun.
Em, have you won a competition?
No! Gav! This is our 100th episode.
Yes, it is! We have done 100 episodes of Gavin Em's How To English podcast.
Astonishing. How's it feel, Gav?
It feels marvellous. I can't believe we've come this far, Em. And I feel like I've really grown as a podcaster, as a language teacher, and as an individual.
Me too, Gav. It really has been a journey. I'm still on that journey. I'm enjoying the journey.
I'm glad to be on this journey with you, Em. You are my guiding star and also my inspiration, as well as all the wonderful followers and contributors we've had along the way.
Oh, that's nice.
On the train of learning and sharing and teaching and everything.
Choo-choo.
And what's more, Em, we also have 1,000 followers on our YouTube channel.
Yay! Go us! And we've got nearly 900 followers on Spotify.
Which is pretty darn good.
It is. So, to kick off our 100th episode, Gav, what's the topic?
Today's topic is a little bit heavier than usual, but don't worry, we've got some support along the way. This is episode 6, season 4, and the title is The Psychology of Learning.
Ooh, sounds good.
Now, we should state that neither of us are qualified psychologists, but we have read an article.
We have, Gav, and now we feel a little bit more confident to talk about it.
It certainly was a great article, which we'll come to in a bit.
I want to introduce our guest.
Who's our guest, Em?
Our guest is Katie from Katie Langscapes, which is clever.
That is very clever.
It's like landscapes, but it's got lang, like language.
Languagescapes. Landscapes of language.
That's beautiful, isn't it?
It is beautiful.
Katie is an English confidence coach.
Love that.
You can find her on Instagram at Katie_Langscapes. On her socials, you can find loads of videos with vocabulary and grammar tips. There are amazing testimonials from her international students. And on her website, you can sign up to her online webinars. That's langscapesenglish.com. And you can also find recommendations on which books to read to improve your English.
That's a wonderful collection of resources. So thanks, Katie, for sharing that with us. We have been very privileged because Katie has shared a really innovative approach for improving your confidence in speaking English based on psychology, which anyone could try in or out of the classroom.
And Gav, I think it's a really good technique for preparing yourself before a conversation in English or a presentation, a telephone call, any situation where you feel nervous.
Em, let's welcome Katie and learn about motivation and longevity through the focus of psychology.
Hello there. My name is Katie Thomas from langscapesenglish.com. I have been teaching English to adults who speak other languages for about 8 years, so I'm excited to be talking to you today. One thing that I have noticed is that my students motivated to learn English have the most longevity with their learning. They are more likely to reach an advanced or fluent level of English. So today, I want to talk to you about what motivation is, why it's important, and how we can increase our motivation to learn a language. First, let's talk about what is motivation? Well, there are a lot of different definitions for motivation. But the Oxford English Dictionary defines motivation as the general desire or willingness of someone to do something. Motivation can come from many different things, like financial gain or moral values or just curiosity or more. And the type of motivation that I want to talk about today is intrinsic language learning motivation. That is motivation that comes from excitement about using a foreign language well. So why is motivation important for learning a language? Well, our success in our second language really depends on our level of motivation. So even if you have the best teacher or the best assignments, if you don't have motivation for continuing to learn, you will not meet your long-term goals for that language. So motivation is important because with it, language learners can take ownership of their learning. And how can we increase our motivation to learn English or whatever language? Well, there is a lovely man who sadly died earlier this year. His name is Zoltan Dornier, and he was the top expert on motivation for learning languages. He came up with an idea called the L2 self. And this idea says that there are three primary sources of motivation to learn a foreign language. Number one is the learner's internal desire to become a good second language user. We call this the ideal L2 self. Number two is the social pressure that comes from the learner's environment to master the L2 or the second language. We call this the ought to self. And the third and final one is the actual experience that we have of being excited about learning our second language. So the first two are sources of motivation that involve our vision of the future. But the last one, number three, that's about our current experience, our present process of learning. So I would like to get a little practice today imagining ourselves in the future speaking English well. So what I would like for you to do now is, if you are able, just close your eyes. Obviously, if you are driving a car, please don't close your eyes. But if you're sitting at your desk and you can, close your eyes. Okay? And I want you to imagine one situation that is most important to you. Is it work, study, friends, or travel? Just imagine yourself in that situation. Where are you? In an office? At a meeting? On the phone? With friends? In a university, in a foreign country, in a cafe, in a shop, in the street, at a station. Choose a place. Where are you? Think about what that place looks like. Think about what you can see around you. How many people are there? What did they look like? What are they wearing? What can you hear? What are you doing? What are you wearing? You are speaking English to someone. Who is it? What do they look like? Imagine that you are speaking English very well. What are you talking about? What kind of things can you say? How do you feel talking English? How do people react to you? Wow, you can open your eyes. I hope that was helpful to you and motivating to you. So if you are learning English, I want you to imagine yourself in that situation often. If you are a teacher of English, I want you to give your students plenty of opportunities to envision themselves using English competently. Thank you so, so much for listening to my talk about motivation today. I hope it helps you. Thank you so much for the How to English podcast. You both are awesome, and I'm so thankful for you. If you have questions about something I said today, feel free to email me at Katy Thomas, Thomas, at langscapesenglish.com. You can find me on social media also at Katy, Katy, underscore langscapes, LANGSCAPES, Katy Langscapes. Okay, thank you all so much for listening. Have a great day. Bye.
Very, very interesting.
I feel very relaxed, and I was so focused on myself in that place. I was focusing on my surroundings. I really pictured myself in a cafe having a conversation, and it really inspired me and gave me a lot of confidence, Em.
Visualization is a really powerful tool. I think we do it in a lot of different situations. If you have something stressful happening in the future or something really important, if there's an event that you really want to go well, you go through it in your mind, don't you? You try and imagine all the things that will happen and who you'll meet, what they'll say, how you'll react. So to do that in a classroom environment, or even just to do it yourself and visualize your English or the language you're learning, what a great idea. I might even try it with some of my students.
As long as they're not driving, as Katy said, please be careful if you close your eyes at any particular moment. I found Katy's voice very calming, which I think is really key to learning. You need to be relaxed and also quite meditative.
No background noises. Clear your mind. Try not to think about other things. And I think you could actually see results.
Me too. And this focus on longevity, where you can see the progress from your students and you know they're going to go the whole way to not only doing some short intensive studies, but they're thinking of their long-term goals. Of course, you can't learn English in just a few weeks. It takes a long time. So hopefully they've got these long-term goals and they can stay the course. And I'm sure they succeed with Katy because she's just so inspiring, Em. We mentioned at the beginning of the episode that we're going to discuss an article together. Now, the article was written by Kendra Cherry, and the title is What is the Psychology of Learning? Kendra Cherry has been writing about psychology and mental health since 2005 for clients including the New York Times and Dot Dash Meredith. The article can be found at verywellmind.com. There'll be a link in the show notes. And Kendra has a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's degree in education.
There's a great graphic, Gav, on the article, and it really encapsulates each of the methods Kendra is describing. Gav, we've both read this article, so if I describe the picture to you, can you tell me what kind of behavioural learning style this is?
I will certainly try them, if I can remember, yeah.
And these are the three major types, okay? Mm-hmm. So the first picture is a dog with a thought bubble above its head, and in that bubble is food, and next to that is a whistle making a sound.
That sounds like Pavlov's dog, who responded to the whistle after being trained to associate the sound with food, and that must be classical conditioning.
That is right. That's a neutral stimulus, which is associated with a natural response. We'll go into that a bit more later. The second picture, there is a rat with a little lever, and it's pushing down on the lever, and there's some food coming out of a little hole next to the lever.
So that's where you have positive response from some action and maybe a negative response from another action. And this is called operant conditioning and sometimes called instrumental conditioning.
Exactly, Gav. And this is a response that is increased or decreased due to reinforcement or punishment.
So if I do it right, you give me a reward. If I do it wrong, I get the sad, frowny face.
Right. And we're going to apply all these to learning and teaching in a moment. But there's one more, and that is a picture of a person folding some T-shirts, what looks like that person's child, doing the same thing next to them.
Ah, so this is a learning style which involves mimicking, which, as far as I remember, is called observational learning.
Gav, that's a hat trick. Observational learning is learning that occurs through observation and imitation of others.
Fantastic. Let's go in further detail, Em. Now, according to the article, Kendra writes, in school systems, classical conditioning can be used to provide students with positive associations within their learning experiences. Em, have you got an example for us?
Yeah. If a student has to give a presentation in front of the class, for example, but feels great anxiety because of it, a teacher can develop a certain positive stimuli that can later be associated with public speaking. And the student in turn learns to associate public speaking with a positive environment.
I like that idea.
Can you flesh it out a bit for me, Gav? How would that actually take place in a learning environment?
From my point of view, I would find out what makes the student nervous. So is it giving presentations? Is it specific scenarios? And then I would practice that in a safe space in the classroom. I would recreate this situation, but I would make the student feel a lot more calm and maybe try and find a fun way to approach the stressful situation, therefore creating a kind of relaxed feeling in the student next time they have to do it for real.
Give me a little bit more, Gav, more of a specific idea.
I thought we could practice the classical conditioning method by choosing something that you don't enjoy and we can make it fun, Em.
Okay, Gav.
What don't you enjoy?
Let me think. I think I've mentioned it a few times in the past. I'm not a big fan of first lessons. I get very nervous, not sure who I'm going to meet, the levels exactly. And yeah, that would be for me something I would like to feel more confident about.
Okay. It would be good if we could practice that. Is there anything else that makes you quite nervous?
Interviews, like job interviews. It's so, for me, it's so important because I always really want the job and then there's a lot of pressure to get it right. And in a way that makes it go bad.
It's often about first impressions.
Yeah.
And if you blow it, then you know it.
And you quite literally don't get another chance to make a first impression because you're not invited back, so they don't actually get to see you again.
Em, I like this idea of interviews because I also get quite nervous before interviews. I have a little activity for us. Em, let's imagine you're having a job interview. You're feeling nervous. I'm going to be quite strict with you, I'm afraid. And then I'm going to turn it round and hopefully we're going to have a bit of fun with this. And then in the future, you'll associate having interviews with having a great time. Are you ready for the challenge?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Em, why would you like to work here? Hurry up, please. I haven't got all day.
I think this is a very...
Okay, thank you. Can you tell me about your previous experience, please?
I worked in a couple of different countries.
Right, okay, thank you very much. What about your strengths and weaknesses?
I'm a really good listener.
Yeah, all right, this is all very stressful, Em, isn't it? This is very stressful. I can see why you don't like interviews. Let's take it down a gear. Maybe you could imagine someone gave you an elephant and you can't sell it or give it away. What would you do with it? Are you picturing this big grey elephant, big hanging ears, the trunk is swinging there and it's looking at you saying, Em, look after me. What do you do?
I'd look after it. I'd give it a hug, take it for a walk, maybe to the park, have nice conversations, one-sided conversations, scratch its ears.
Feed it some peanuts.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I'm already picturing this and it's very, very calming.
I don't know if it would be in reality, actually. It's probably quite hard work looking after an elephant, but yeah, why not?
How about if you could choose one song to play every time you walked into a room, what would you choose and why?
That is a nice question. I'm thinking maybe Adele, Hello.
Oh, I can imagine that. Describe that entrance to me.
I'm opening the door, I'm walking in, cue the music, starts with that word hello. Of course, that's a good word to walk into a room with. Everybody looks round and my eyebrow just raises slightly in a kind of hi.
I like that a lot.
And then it stops. This is fun.
I'm really enjoying this activity. I've got two more questions for you, Em. If you could have any superhero power, what would it be and why?
That is one of those questions I always ask my students, but I've never, ever, ever thought about myself.
What do your students say?
Oh, loads of stuff. They want to fly. They want to be able to read minds. They want to be invisible. A lot of them say they want to be invisible. I'm not sure why that is.
Curious.
Yeah. What would I like? I would like the ability to turn any material into chocolate.
Any material?
Yes.
Accidentally or?
No, when I decide. But anything could become chocolate just as I touch it.
So you wouldn't like Midas's curse where he touched things and they turned to gold and...
No. This is a selective power. Turn on and offable.
That is a very nice power to have. I've got one more question for you, Em. Oh, before I ask you a question, how are you feeling about interviews now?
Well, I'm feeling very relaxed and having a nice time.
My final question, what do you think of garden gnomes?
You mean those little ceramic people that stand around in gardens, mm-hmm. frozen in a position?
Some of them are fishing, some of them might be doing the laundry.
Yeah. What's my opinion? They're cute. Slightly scary.
It's like they've got their own little world where they're just kind of hanging out. But yeah. If you look at them, they stop. And you imagine if you stop looking at them, they can just carry on, you know, fishing, laundry folding.
And I'm sure their eyes are kind of following you around as you're walking past the gardens. I've noticed they're sort of looking one direction and you look back and they're looking a different way. I like that, Gav. That was great. So what would you do at that point? Would you then go back to the scary interview formal questions or would you just mix those questions in along the way?
I probably would just drop the scary questions at the beginning and then at the end of the activity, after asking some different, interesting, maybe fun questions, ask the student how they feel and why they think that they get a bit stressed in interviews, and maybe we'll just talk through some of the stresses and think of some other strategies for how to calm ourselves before interviews.
Nice. I would probably put them in along the way just because it lightens the mood as you're going along and it's surprising and maybe they're not expecting it. So there's different ways to do it. Kind of reminds me of the treatment for when people have really bad fears of things, like people that are scared of spiders, and they start by introducing the person to a little spider and then it gets bigger and bigger, and by the end of the treatment that person doesn't have a problem with spiders. It's like you're putting a funny hat and a red nose on the interview questions, isn't it? You're kind of making the fear go away.
I think so. And not pushing somebody into the deep end and seeing if they survive.
Exactly, Gav. So if you did this in a lesson, you might just want to slowly build up to the scary questions. Before the student is even aware of it, they're answering some really stressful and difficult questions, but they've not really noticed because they've had such a good time getting there.
So probably don't do it the way I did it, but switch it the other way around. Have some fun with it and slowly feed in those difficult, more stressful questions. But keep an eye on your student. Make sure they're not getting stressed out.
Yeah, and have a break when that happens. Come back to it. Let's jump to operant conditioning. Operant like operational or operating, okay? Kendra explains in the article that operant conditioning, which is sometimes called instrumental conditioning, is a learning process in which the probability of a response occurring is increased or decreased due to reinforcement or punishment. Reinforcement could lead to increases in behaviours where punishment would result in decreases of that behaviour. For example, your student might learn to complete their homework because you reward them with treats or praise. Or if you play a quiz with your students, every time they get a correct answer, they get a point. But if they make a mistake, they'll be corrected or they don't get a point. This is a reward or punishment system.
This is a nice method, Em, and I think we use this all the time while we're teaching. Maybe your student's telling you something, asking some questions, and the teacher's response, happy face, good question, getting the correct answer for your question, student, well done. Sad face, eyebrows down, oh no, I've made a mistake. Student has to correct the question or the statement before the teacher will respond.
Yeah.
That's your reinforcement or punishment.
Any kind of error correction, really, I think we use as teachers, involves that technique. If you're doing a gap fill and the answer is right, you smile, you say, yep, great, next question. If it's wrong, then you frown and you say, no. So it's an immediate response that is clear. The student has no confusion about whether it's right or wrong. And then they move on to the next question or the next activity because they've got it right.
Em, have you got any activities that I can practice this method with?
Yes, I have, Gav. This brings to mind a really good exercise from pronunciation games. And if I send you the page, if you can open the document and describe what you can see on the page.
I can see an arrangement of hexagons. The top left there is a B, which appears to be entering the maze of hexagons. And I can see there's one at the end, bottom right, which is exiting. It's obviously gone through the maze successfully. What's my task, Em?
Well, you've got it half right. You've got to get out the maze. But the way to do it, what can you see in the hexagons, Gav?
In each of the hexagons, there are two words. They're both short words. And I don't know what I need to do, Em.
Right, Gav. You need to find a word that makes the same sound in an adjacent hexagon. You can only move one space at a time. And you can move in any direction where you see a gap between the hexagons, horizontally or diagonally, but it has to have the same sound. So it's like a rhyming word, okay? You can select the top or the bottom word. And then when you go to the next one, you can either switch the word or use the same one.
So my reward is I continue going through the maze until eventually I can escape. Or my punishment is that I have to go back and correct my mistake.
Or you get stuck and you need help.
I wouldn't like to get stuck in a honeycomb maze of, oh, actually, it sounds delicious.
No, you want to get out. You want to get out. But I'm not going to help you unless you get stuck, okay? So I'm just going to leave you to it.
Right. I can see in the first box I've got the words arm and meat. And I'm looking at the adjacent boxes, which have the words do eat and give is. Now, I know that meet, M-E-E-T, and eat, E-A-T, have the same sound. And I'm going to continue, Em, through the maze until I get to the exit. Here we go. Eat and... Oh, no, that doesn't match anything. Okay, do and new, N-E-W. New and you. You and... No. Okay, I'm switching to cage. Cage and...
Okay, stick with you. That famous Irish group that everybody loves.
Ah, you and two. Oh, I've got into the next box then. Oh, this is nerve-wracking. Two and I can't see a matching word. So I'm going to switch to socks. Socks and box. Very good. Right, I'm going to do one more. box and... No, I don't want to go back to socks, so I'm going to switch to no, N-O, and toe, T-O-E. Not foot fingers, but toes.
Good. So that is a good example, I think. You carried on, you got that reward by going to the next box and feeling that achievement. And when you got stuck, you couldn't move, it got a bit frustrating. I had to help, but that's it, I think.
That's a nice way to demonstrate operant conditioning. I felt like I was pulling the levers, I was moving onwards. And as you said, when I got stuck, when I did it wrong, I thought, oh no, where's my reward? I've got to go back. And that was my punishment. Excellent. Good example, Em. This leads us to observational learning. As you described, you might see somebody folding some shirts. You might see somebody speaking English in a specific way and think, oh, I love the way they speak English. It's such a great tip to imitate an inspirational person.
And my students do it all the time, Gav. When I ask a question and I hear one student say a phrase like, oh, let me think about it. And then I hear another student use the same phrase. And I know they've just picked it up in that lesson because it sounded good and they want to use it too.
That happens all the time and I like it. And sometimes your students even start to sound a bit like you.
You can hear it. Yeah, they echo sometimes what you say.
That's a nice outcome from an English lesson. Observational learning, as Kendra mentions in the article, is a process in which learning occurs through observing and imitating the actions of others. Em, now I've prepared a little activity for us to practice the observational learning. What I want you to do in this activity is to imitate the way I say these titles. So you're practicing intonation, pronunciation, stress, connected speech, so you can sound more fluent when you speak.
Okay.
Now, I've prepared some of my favourite movie titles. They are on these cards. Let me take one of them. Right, the first one is Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
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 That's a nice title, isn't it? It was a bit of connected speech there in the middle. We had some stress at the beginning. Yeah, more time. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, that's nice. Em, do it one more time, but I'm not going to repeat it this time.
It's easy to remember. I've done it three times. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Nice. Next one. 2 weeks' notice. 2 weeks' notice.
That's very straightforward. 2 weeks' notice.
No, listen to me. 2 weeks' notice.
2 weeks' notice.
Nice. Not 2 weeks' notice, but 2 weeks' notice.
2 weeks' notice.
One more time.
2 weeks' notice.
Number three. Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
One more time.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
That's it. Let's connect that Roger Rabbit at the end. Ready? Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Nice. One more time.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Excellent. Number four. The Pursuit of Happiness.
The Pursuit of... Say again.
The Pursuit of Happiness.
The Pursuit of Happiness.
Pursuit.
Pursuit.
The Pursuit. The Pursuit of Happiness.
The Pursuit of Happiness.
I like it. One more time.
The Pursuit of Happiness.
Number five. Marley and Me.
Marley and Me.
That's it. I've dropped the D because of my accent, M. Not and, but Marley and Me. And me. Marley and Me.
Marley and Me.
One more time.
Marley and Me.
Perfect.
It's like N, like fish and chips.
Fishin.
Fishin' chips.
Marley and.
Marley and Me.
Nice. And the last one. My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
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 Nice. I like the way you dropped the T there. Fat.
I know. Can I say it again? My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
One more time.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
That is fabulous.
It's like you're eating an apple or something. It's a real crunchy one, that one.
It was very crunchy. Very, very nice. And just before we finish this activity...
Can I just comment, Gav, on your excellent taste in films?
It's quite diverse, isn't it?
It's fantastic.
Actually, I played a little trick on you then, Em.
How?
because this is only the first part of this activity.
Oh.
If I show you the cards again, you might realise there are some grammatical mistakes and spelling mistakes in some of these titles. Have a quick look.
Ooh, interesting. I like this activity. This is lots of fun.
So what's wrong with the first title? Shrink.
Honey, I Shrank the Kids. Mm. But it's called Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
I know, it's wrong.
Oh, you're joking.
No, it's for real, Em. It's a grammatical mistake in the title. It should be I Shrank the Kids.
Whoa.
How about the second title?
2 weeks' notice. There's no apostrophe on the S.
Where should it be, before or after the S?
Oh, I hate this. It's after the S.
Of course it's after, because it's more than 1 week, isn't it? 2 weeks' S apostrophe notice.
Plural weeks belonging to the notice, possessive, yep.
What about the third one?
Have I got to say it in the same way? Who framed Roger Rabbit? There's no question mark.
Yeah, well done. Next.
The Pursuit of Happiness. Well, happiness is spelt wrong, but I think it was spelt wrong in the title. It's got a Y in the middle. No idea why they did that.
And it should have...
an I.
Yes.
But isn't it in the film? I think I remember the film did talk about it. Can't remember it exactly.
It's still a mistake, Em.
Yeah.
How about Marley and Me?
That looks fine.
Marley and I?
Okay, really?
Yeah.
I think it depends on the sentence. It's such a famous film.
I think these days people say, and me, anyway. I don't think they worry too much about the grammar. How about the last one? My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding. There's no commas with the adjectives.
Mm-hmm, that's it. Separate those adjectives with commas.
Can I just say My Big Fat Greek Wedding one more time, because I like that one. That's a really nice activity. You could do that in the classroom with either grammar errors or just get the students to say them again in the same way that they said them and if they can remember them. It's a nice way to practice pronunciation and grammar combined, and you could even do it as a miming thing so that the students have to guess what the film is. It's good.
I like it. A lot of mileage, that one.
Yep.
Have you got any ideas how you would practice the observational learning technique?
Yes, it's similar to yours in the way that it's mimicking the pronunciation, the intonation, the connected speech, and also the rhythm of a sentence. So I'm going to ask you a question that you need to answer, but I don't want a short answer. I want you to repeat the question in the answer. So Gav, if I say, do you like coffee? You have to answer, yes, I like coffee. Okay.
I'm going to have to really focus on this activity.
You may have guessed that it's not a simple question. So, are you ready?
Let's have a try.
Gav, if you had to choose, would you prefer to have as neighbours a couple with 5 children or a couple with 5 dogs?
If I had to choose a couple with five... Hold on, Em. Can I hear that again, please?
Yes, Gav. One more time. If you had to choose, would you prefer to have as neighbours a couple with 5 children or a couple with 5 dogs?
If I had to choose a couple with 5 children or a couple with 5 dogs, I would choose neither. Oh, do I have to choose?
You have to choose.
Okay. If I had to choose as neighbours a couple with 5 children or a couple with 5 dogs, I would choose the couple with 5 dogs.
Why?
Because I could take them for a walk and it could be really nice.
Good answer. Next question. If you had to choose, would you prefer to live in a 4th floor flat without a lift or in a ground floor flat with a restaurant next door?
If I had to choose between living in a ground floor flat...
Nope. 4th floor flat first.
If I had to choose between living in a 4th floor flat...
Without
a lift or a ground floor flat next to a restaurant...
With a restaurant
next door, I would choose to live on the ground floor flat with the restaurant next door because maybe it's my favourite kind of food and I could go there every day.
Nice. You want one more, Gav?
Yes, please.
If you had to choose, would you prefer to have an enormous house with a tiny garden or a tiny house with an enormous garden?
If I had to choose between a huge house and a tiny garden?
No, not huge. It was enormous.
If I had to choose between an enormous house with a tiny garden or a tiny house with an enormous house...
Garden.
Oh. If I had to choose between an enormous house with a tiny garden and a tiny house with an enormous garden, I would choose an... Oh, that's a really difficult one. I would choose a tiny house with an enormous garden so I can play in the garden all year long. And maybe I'll even consider putting an extension on the tiny house.
Okay, good.
Thanks, Em. I really enjoyed that activity. It was engrossing.
Depending on the level of your students, you could get more complicated or start easier, get really complicated at the end. If you've got very high level students, you can make the questions really, really long. It is quite challenging.
I think I was learning grammar at the same time then. Was that second conditional?
It was. I'm glad you noticed.
I am paying attention today.
Yes. So it's there. It's all in that activity. The grammar, the intonation, the pronunciation there. And also you have to think a bit because you've got to answer the question.
I was really focused on that activity.
Today's episode has been fascinating, Gav. I want to say thank you again to Katie at Langscapes for her contribution. And Kendra Cherry, if you are listening, thank you very much for your very interesting article.
It was fascinating, informative, and incredibly educational and accessible. I was able to actually understand it, Em, which is great.
That is a good point, because a lot of this psychology stuff can get a bit complicated, and it's nice that it's so straightforward and also practical with examples that you can use in your lessons immediately.
I was able to analyse and understand the article. Analyse, Em, is a good word for...
Learn a word. Yes, I chose this one because my students don't always pronounce it right, Gav.
Do they not?
And it's hard because the noun and the verb are very different. The sound is very different.
To analyse an analysis.
Yeah, stress changes, doesn't it? Analyse stresses on the first syllable. Analysis stresses on the second syllable. And who is the person who does the analysis, Gav?
An analyzer?
I think that is used, but it's not the common one.
Then you mean an analyst?
Yeah. So you're back to the stress on the first syllable. Analyst.
And they might be dealing with some analytics.
That's right.
And M, they will need to be very analytical while studying analytics.
Oh, you're back to the middle again. Analytical. It's hard, isn't it? So I understand why my students get it all mixed up. But what is to analyse, Gav? What does it actually mean?
It means to examine something in detail, carefully, in order to understand it.
That's exactly it, in a nutshell, I think. And remember, if you use American English, how would you spell that word?
I might use a Z instead of the British S.
Okay, so it's...
Analyze, not S-E.
So there is a difference. You might see both. That's the reason why. Remember, an analyst is an analytical person who analyses analytics, which is, I suppose, a kind of analysis.
I think it's exactly an analysis. Em, you have bowled me over with your knowledge of this word.
Is that a good thing?
It certainly is.
Okay, Gav. I'm looking forward to seeing you again next time for the 101st. Is that right?
103.
Not thirst.
103.
I am 103.
Me too. And that's a good reminder that we've got a ko-fi.com/howtoenglishpod contribution page where you can come and show some love, which... kindly, Charlotte visited. Charlotte from English in Athens.
Thank you very much, Charlotte. Hugs to you. That was such a nice surprise.
Yes, thank you so much. Em, catch you later.
See ya.